contradiction, because it says in Kohelet that there's nothing new under the sun. On the other hand, the rabbis say
that Ein Beis Medrash Bli Chiddush, that there's no study session without a Chiddush.
I mean, to say that there's no such thing as just saying, oh, there's something you've learned before, but every time you get together and learn, you discover a new point. Mm-hmm. So that means that there is something new. The Kohelet has said that there is nothing new. So Larry thinks there's two different frameworks. In the framework of reality, it's all there. Whether it be in the universe, and nothing new comes into existence, whatever we don't create or invent, but simply discovering the mechanism, the underlying mechanism, it's a work of discovery. And the same is true of Torah. That there's nothing new in the sense of something new coming into being, but in our personal framework, the type of thing we are engaged in is really to uncover and to discover. That for us it's new. For us it's new. In fact, it says, these words that I command you this day shall be on your heart. So Rashi says, what does it mean that I command you this day? I mean, every time we read it, right, we're reading it this day, it's like today. So Rashi says, yeah, that every day it should be new to you, the Torah should be new to you as the day it was given on Sinai. So what does it mean every day it should be new to you? But it's not new, we've had the Torah for many years. Yet every time we study it should be just as fresh as when we received it at Sinai. But that would seem to be an impossibility, because it's not in human nature for something to retain its freshness and its newness, because we know that people get tired of things and get rid of things, and then they mistakenly, they don't understand why they got rid of it, so they wind up getting the same thing in a different form. And that's basically what Donald Trump is doing right now, right? Mm-hmm. That's basically the thing. I mean, that's really the classical case. It's interesting thing, because the Chazal says that the Mizbeach weeps. Mizbeach weeps when a man divorces the wife of his youth. So what's the idea of the Mizbeach weeps? I don't know. Sometimes.
No, it's fantasy because.
Yeah, so sometimes there be, yeah, but you mean there sometimes there's good reasons for.
Yeah, I did discuss it with you.
Okay.
Do you remember?
I don't know.
At the
Okay. Anyways, that's right. That's right. That's right. So that's the point. The point is that, of course, if there's really good reason, sometimes that's the reality of the situation, but very often it's because the person is a fantasy. In other words, why is he divorcing a person, a woman? Because simply he's in the world of fantasies. He's gotten tired of this particular person. He's looking for other fantasies. So that's why there's Be'ach weeps, because that person, there's no hope for that person. Because he's not going to correct the situation. He's just going to find another individual whom he can relate the fantasy to. So this becomes a new fantasy. So then what happens? After a while, he gets tired of this one, and then he goes on to the next one. That's the case, it seems to me, the case of, and it just struck me, like today's paper had a picture of his wife, and alongside a picture of his new girlfriend, and they don't look that much different, to be honest, it's basically the same thing, and you can see clearly what it is, it's no difference, so now in his mind, and his own wife, I mean, notice she's a little older, but 10 years ago she was just as good looking as this one, not better, she's still pretty good looking. So what's the point? The point is he's tired of her. Why is he tired of her? Because he's tired of her, he's tired of her, right? And since in his own psyche, he's so wealthy, he figures that he can have anything he wants. Perhaps why should he live in a state of deprivation? So therefore he's looking for something new. But now he believes that this is the one. See, what he's not going to correct his mistake. He's not going to correct his mistake. He's just going to believe that maybe his whole way of living is what he's looking for is completely not realistic. He's not going to do that. He's going to say, I attached myself to the wrong particular. It was that woman didn't have that quality. Even though he felt about her at the time as he feels about this new one now. He's not going to blame it on himself. He's going to blame it on her. She was lacking in something. She doesn't have the ability to hold my attraction forever. But this new one does, of course. So he's going to go marry this new one. A couple of years, the same process. That's why the Mizbeach weeps. Because that person is not in the world of reality. Okay. Now we take up the subject of the day, Nishamot. We have returned to this subject from time to time, and I'd like to get back into it today. That is the dialogue, the famous dialogue between Moshe and God at the burning bush. So this is in Shemos. chapter 3. But, some Moshe encountered this fascinating sight that the bush was in fire, but it wasn't being consumed, and he turned to look, and so forth. All right? That's right. Right, very nice. I know. Now, the thing is, I want to take it up from the point where God communicates to Moshe what the purpose of the of this confrontation, of this meeting, so to speak, is all about. That begins on verse 7. On verse 7. Vayomer Hashem, and God said, Ro re'isi es ani ami ashev mitzrayim. I have seen the affliction of my nation that is in Egypt. V'yes ba'kasav shamati mitnei nodzav. And their screams I have heard from before their oppressors. Yadati es machova, for I know their pains. V'ered la tilo miyad mitzrayim. And I have gone down to save them from Egypt. Interestingly, the language of I've gone down. As though, of course, God doesn't go down. I mean, on the simple level, it means that God is, it's the way we perceive it. We perceive it as though God is intervening. And, you know, that would be as though a king were to go down and take care of a situation. But the term yurida, or erid, to go down, has a connotation. Rav Chait mentioned that Rav Soloveitchik made this point. Interesting idea. But it's more than just saying that God will, the idea of God having to get involved in human affairs is yurida, so to speak. It's something that goes against the ultimate plan of God. In other words, it means to say that mankind should function in a just and in a rational way. If that were the case, it would not be necessary. It would not be necessary for God to intervene. It's yurida. Because it depends on what? One second. Well, what that depends on what? The nature of the intervention. Yes, it doesn't mean, the point is, I don't mean necessarily any relationship that God would have with the course of human affairs. For example, the revelation of the Torah would certainly not be regarded as a yurida. But when it's necessary for God to intervene, for example, I think the same expression is used in the case of Sodom, Sodom and Amorah. I will go down, let me go down and see if what I've heard, if the evil that I've heard is really true. So it is the yurida, because it's a departure from God's ultimate plan. In other words, it should not be necessary. If people were to follow their intelligence and to live in line with understanding, then these types of things wouldn't be necessary. So in that sense, it's a departure for the reader. I have gone down to save them from the hands of Mitzrayim, Ulahalozo, and to bring them up to this land, a good and broad land, a land which flows milk and honey, the place of the Canaanite, the Hittite, etc., all the various nations that inhabited the land. And now, God returns to the thing, the cries of the B'nai Israel have come unto me, and also I have seen the oppression that the Egyptians are oppressing them. This seems to be a redundancy. Does anybody care to answer that? It seems to be a redundancy. In other words, it's the screams, and I have seen the oppression. Well, that seems to be the same thing. Because the screaming is a result of the oppression. So why are both emphasized over here? In this passage, in verse 9. Yeah. Okay, that's a good point. What Ronit is saying would answer, yeah. In other words, you see, even in Zion, I have seen the affliction and I have heard the screams. So what is the difference between the affliction and the screams? And Sakas B'nai Yisrael brought Elias in test. So I think the point that Ronit is making is that there were two factors over here. One is the extent of the oppression. Everything was predetermined. The Jews, as we explained this already, the Jews had to go through the experience in Mitzrayim. It was necessary to prepare them psychologically and mentally for the willingness to receive the Torah. We'll take that up in greater detail in subsequent shiur, why this experience was necessary. But clearly it was. It was part of God's plan for B'nai Yisrael. But it wasn't enough that they were in a state of suffering. That state had to bring them to the realization that the only source for their salvation could be God. That was part of it, because God heard their screams. That means that they did turn to God. And as you know, at the beginning, they were turning away from God because they were involved in assimilation. So that's an important element. But you also see that Begamra Isi in Pasuk Tet, as halacha, Hashem Yisrael Lochtimotam, is necessary too. Because that explains another factor, the reason why the Egyptians are deserving to be punished. Because in the plague and in God's dealings with Egypt, there are two factors involved. One is to save the Jews, the second one is to afflict the Egyptians, so the Egyptians have to be guilty as well. So God is pointing out all the factors for Moshe. And now, the Atalacha, now and go. The Ashlach El Paro, now we'll send you to Paro. Vahote Es Ami B'nei Yisrael Mitzrayim. Take out my nation, the B'nei Yisrael from Mitzrayim. Now what I want to concentrate on is the next two psukkahs, the response of Moshe Rabbeinu. And therefore I want, as we go through the next two psukkahs, if you could isolate and determine what the problems are. Vayomer Moshe, this is the response of Moshe. In other words, we're going to deal with is the response of Moshe and God's answer to Moshe's question. So Pasuk Yud Aleph is the response of Moshe. Vayomer Moshe El Ha'olokim, and Moshe said to God, Mi Anochi Ki Elech Al Paro, who am I that I should go to Paro? V'chi'oti Es B'nei Yisrael Mitzrayim, and that I should take out the Jews from Mitzrayim. Now, first of all, one has to ask oneself, how many questions did Moshe ask? Is this all one question, or are there two questions? Let's just start with that. Anybody? Three questions? Oh, boy. Now you got it. That's the chiddush, because I thought, you know. That's okay. It's an open class. It's an open forum. Pop, you think that there are two questions here. Yeah, that's one question.
Okay.
What's the question then?
What's the problem? Whatever
his were. No, in other words, what's the question?
Why am I chosen?
Yes. The question is simple. It pertains to myself. Mm-hmm. Who am I? I'm not qualified for this mission. What is my qualification? That's one question, right? Who am I? I mean, I'm not, as far as I know, I don't see, I'm just a shepherd, and a thinker, philosopher. But I'm certainly not a statesman. I don't have any political training. So how can I do this? That's one question. What was the other question? What was the second question? Renee? I'm being chosen to go to Paro and remove, that's all part of one mission.
No. Why am I taking...
Well, that's what he's saying. In other words, God is saying to him, I am sending you to Paro. No, take a look in front of Pasuk Tet. I am sending you to Paro and take out my nation from Egypt. So that's the mission. So Moshe is saying, who am I to go to Paro and take the Jews out of Egypt? There seems to be one question. It's just, in other words, the real question is, who am I to do both of these things? I'm not fit to be a leader. I'm not a leader. So I can't go to Paro and I can't take the Jews out. Me, of course, you could say, well, I could take the Jews out, but I can't go to Paro. That's really, basically what Moshe was saying is that he doesn't view himself as being qualified to be a leader. So, I'll tell you what, on the level of plain pshat, what would you say? You know, you have to understand, it's very important, especially for the teachers amongst us, a lot of teachers and teachers of Chumash, that, because very often, you know, you read the pasuk, it has one meaning, then you read Rashi, and Rashi gives you a few more meanings. So what is it? Now, a lot of people tend to think that what Rashi is saying becomes now the plain meaning of the pasuk. It's not true. The Chazal say, "Ein mikra yotzei midei pshuto." The pasuk must be taken on its plain. It has a plain literal meaning. Now, the Medrashim are further ideas that are alluded to in the Yechav Medrash. It's something which is alluded to, but that's not the plain shot. You'll see many occasions when Rashi says things that even seem to contradict the plain shot. So, on the level of plain shot, in other words, if you're going to teach this to a child, what is the plain, on the level of plain shot, how many questions would you say there are here?
One.
Exactly. That's very important to know as a teacher, otherwise, because kids get very confused. They don't know what Pasuk is or Rashi is saying. I see, you know, like whenever you ask them a thing, they give you a measure, but they don't know the plain shot. That's not good. You should know the plain shot. One question. One question. Plain Chinese really is one question. Who am I to go? Well, he's responding to what God said. I'm not qualified for this mission, which means to go to Paro and take other people. But Rashi breaks it up into two questions, because there is an allusion to two different things. And here Rashi goes a little bit away from the plain, from the plain sense of the pasuk. Take a look at Rashi. Those who have Rashi. Mi anochi, so Rashi says, ma ani choshev l'daber im hamalachim. That question pertains to himself. What is my significance? I don't have the qualification or the ability to speak to kings. That's not my field. So the first question was pertaining to his own eligibility, right, his own qualification. The Chiyotzi at Bnei Israel, the Rashi says, V'ach im choshev ani, and even if you should say that I am significant, for whatever reason, I don't understand, but let's assume that I am, Ma zachu Yisrael, She yasa lahem neis, Votiyein mimitzrayim. What do the Jews merit that a miracle should be done for them and I shall take them out of Egypt? So Rashi says he was really referring to two different things. One is to himself, I'm not crushing. But the second one is that as I look at the Jews, they're not worthy of your intervention as well. Well, you have the Rashi in front of you. I want to explain one thing. But this, it means like this, that that's not the plain shot of the pasuk, but in the pasuk there is the allusion. Moshe is alluding to this problem. There are two problems that are bothering him over here. One is he himself, and secondly, the factor of the Jews being worthwhile. Now let's analyze these questions. I see you have a lot of strong reactions to this question. Let's analyze the questions of Moshe in terms of whether they're valid or not. The first question, is the first question valid? And then we'll do the second question. Now you seem to not like the questions too much. But what do you think? Are they valid questions? Are they problematic? What's wrong with the question? Doesn't bother you?
That's what bothers me, because if Hashem speaks to him, how can he say that he's worthy to speak to Hashem and not to come to follow?
Oh, I see. That's a different thing.
Okay,
Rishon. Let's take the first one first. The thing is, the question that you've raised, that if he could speak to God, he could speak to follow, I think Mindy has answered that question, that it's two different types of a phenomenon, because to speak to God means to be on a very high level of nevuah. But to speak to Paro, you're dealing with a low level type of person,
right.
And that's a totally different occupation. Well, that could be. But the question would be, though, that's very good. But the only question is, I think the second question was that, what do you mean? What is he questioning? Who am I? If God has designated you, so God knows. God knows who's best suited for the job. So what's the question? God is saying you're fit. God wouldn't have appointed you. You can't. What's the premise? What is the premise? The premise of a person, an individual, asks you to do a job. So since the individual is fallible, it's his opinion, so you could disagree. You could say, I just don't think I'm qualified. But if God has chosen you, so where is there room to say that you're not qualified? Obviously God knows who's qualified and who's not. It's certainly much better than you know. So if God told you to do something, say, okay, I guess I'm qualified. So what's Moshe saying? What's Moshe's question? Okay. That's what Jackie said. So Jackie answered it by saying that the fact that he asked this question doesn't mean he disagrees with God. In the same sense, when God told Avram about Sodom and Amorah, so what's the basis for Avram to argue with God? Shall the judge of the entire world not do mishpat? What's his basis for arguing? Obviously, God can't draw conclusions. He can't be wrong. So it doesn't mean that he's questioning that God might be wrong. It means he wants to understand the principle. He wants to understand the principle. Now, in the same sense, Moshe has to understand in a rational way. If he's being given an assignment, he has to understand it. And if he looks at himself and he sees he doesn't have the qualifications, how is he going to perform the assignment? So that question is acceptable. Now what about the second question? Is the second question acceptable? No. But is there something else that's problematical? No. There you said it's different. What's he questioning their schus?
He's questioning his ability.
His ability? No, he's saying Mazaku. They're not worthy of a miracle.
No, I think he wants to know how to go about saving the night. In other words, on what the hook should they come up? So that's sort of his tactic about how he can get
them. No, I don't know that it's tactic. Jackie?
You said that he wasn't resistant.
No, he was not resistant.
There was later on, he was kind of told that this was a problem in
Jewish. Oh, later on, he was rebuked when he said, V'heim lo yaminu li. They won't believe in me. And God rebuked him for that. In other words, he held that they weren't on a sufficiently rational level to accept, to listen to what he would tell them. Mm-hmm. But that's not a good point. I think the thing is like this. If you take a look, God gave him a whole prologue and explained why he's going to do what he's doing. God explained that, of course, what do you mean? What merit? They've gone through this tremendous oppression and enslavement, and it's wrong. It's wrong that this should exist. It's intolerable that the situation of injustice should exist. God has explained to them already. Mm-hmm. If that's the case, then what's there left to ask? What's their merit? You see the situation? No? What? Yeah, that's the question. That's my question on the question. The question on the question. Alright? So, let's take a look at the answers. Let's go further now. Yeah. Before we come back to this. What was God's answer? Well, following Rashi now. This pasuk is very, very difficult to understand on the plain level. By Yom and God said, Kiyeh Himach, for I will be with you. And this is for you the sign that I have sent you. When you take out the people from Egypt, they will worship God on this mountain. Now, what is the plain meaning? It seems to be like, and God said, for I will be with you. Now, what is this thing about the sign? And this is the sign that I have sent you. When you take out the nation from Egypt, they'll worship God on this mountain. It doesn't seem to make sense. Because when Moshe comes back to the Jews and he has to give them a sign that God has sent them, he needs a sign right now. How is this? In other words, that's going to happen later. Now, how is the event which is going to happen later? By the way, this is a reference. This is a reference to Harban. No, to Harban Sinai, to the revelation of Sinai. What kind of thing is this? When they come out later, this is the sign that I sent you now. The whole thing doesn't make sense, even on a simple level.
Well,
there's a plan, but how does that answer? But the point is, how is it a proof that I've sent you? How is that a proof that I've sent? I'm going to go back to the Jews now and say God has sent me, and I need proof. Well, the proof is when you come out. It's not
maybe
it.
The
well, what does it mean? And this shall be the sign that I have sent you.
Because
this shall be the sign.
Oh,
to Moshe. But again, so it's not good. If Moshe needs a sign right now, well, first of all, why would Moshe? One time, I'll get to. Why would Moshe need a sign right now? Moshe doesn't need a sign that God sent him. Moshe is speaking to God, right? So Moshe doesn't need a sign for himself. He knows that God has sent him. He's not questioning that.
That
I sent you.
No, also the brick. This is a deal I have.
Oath is a sign. No, oath is a sign.
You can't say that it's a brick. This is a deal I have with
you.
When I take this
away,
we'll come to
the sign. No. Then it should have said the
Zelachah brick. Oh, it is brick.
No, it's not. It should have said it. It's oath. Oath is a sign. Oath is always a sign. I just want to mention, I'll give you, before Jackie has something to say, it's interesting. The terminology, it says that you will worship God on this mountain. Now, if that's a reference to Mamre Har Sinai, the revelation of the Torah Sinai, why did it say that they'll worship? There was no worship over there. There was no worship of God. They just received the... Why is God saying they will worship me? They didn't worship God on the mountain. On the mountain, they just assembled and received the Torah. So why is the term Ta'abdun, which is Avodah? Yeah, but the Beis HaMikdash wasn't built on that mountain. No. Oh, the Har Moriah, that's not Har Sinai. Har Sinai is not part of Eretz Yisrael. Har Sinai is in the Sinai. They returned it recently. It was
vibrant.
Without consulting, they returned that to Egypt. they thought they even knew which mountain it is. I don't know if that was ever that way. Anyways, why did he use that term? Nice concept over here. Anyway, why would he say Tav Nun, yes?
Because it's the whole point, I think, is that you look at it from an objective practical sense. The children of Israel are on the lowest level. What would ever change them? Even if they were oppressed, there's still never been anything different. It's only through the Torah.
Yeah, but let me ask before we get to that, why did God say that they were worshiping on this mountain? When, in fact, they're just receiving the Torah. Okay, so what we're saying is, so that is worship.
It's not Mishnah, this is not why Avoga is said, Avoga is not a Mishnah.
You see, interesting. Well, you see, interesting.
It's probably an illusion to the base of
Mishnah. It's not necessarily an illusion. I think like this. It's interesting. There was, you just did a Gemara, I think it was Rich. Interesting Gemara in Makos. And it says that when David was very old, the Gemara in Makos says that when David was very old, so the gossip mongers, the people would complain. No, they complained about that deficit. But they said, when will this old one die, pass away, so that Shlomo can become king and build the Beit HaMikdash, and we can go up on the Regolim and bring the sacrifices? So David felt bad about that. No one wants. It's not a comfortable feeling that people are waiting for you to die so they can get on with the... Because David couldn't build the Beit HaMikdash. So God answered him and said, I don't remember the exact quote, but to the effect like one hour of you learning Torah is worth more to me than 1,000 sacrifices they will bring. So what do you see from that? That people have a misconception. People think that the ultimate expression of religiosity is the sacrificial. And in Judaism, it's not true. That mentality is very prevalent today, by the way, because people subordinate. They think that the highest level of worship is very right. A certain type of emotional attitude that one adopts towards God, which is expressed in the sacrificial mentality. But no, knowledge is the highest. Knowledge, chachma. That's right. That everything, the whole system of the Beit HaMikdash, is only intended as a means to an end to bring a person into the situation of true ideas, the correct ideas with regard to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And that's the real service of God. In fact, the intellectual service of God is the greatest. It is when a person is in a state where he relates to God through true ideas. That's why Har Sinai is Tavan, that's the real Avodah. Because Sinai represents Torah, true ideas. And the Mikdash is a means. Now, of course, that idea that I just expressed is completely negated by most people today. Now, let's get back to the questions. So the questions were.
Well,
let me do the Rashi. The Rashi is like this: Ayam l'tiyeima, and God said, "For I will be with you." Eshivu al rishon rishon mi'alachon nachon. He answered him on the first question first, and the second question afterwards. Shemartam yanochi tiyelech al paro. You said, "Who am I that I should go to Paro?" Lo shalchahi, it's not from you, tiyem mishali, but rather from me. Tiyeimach, for I will be with you. Okay? What does that mean? We'll continue the Rashi in a second. What's the answer to the question?
Okay, you are basically saying, I'm really going, but I need you to go for me.
In other words, what was Moshe Rabbeinu's premise?
What made him think that he had to be?
Because he thought that God is entrusting the accomplishment of the mission to him. That is, God is placing it in his hands, and he has to carry it out through his own ability. And therefore, he's saying, "I don't have the ability." So that was a valid question. Now, God is telling him the answer is no. That is not the nature of your role. I am going to be the. I'm not demanding of you that you bring about the Exodus. Now, the next part of the Rashi is very interesting. Somebody asked me a question recently. the question. The question was, I think it was Rich, by the way. The question was that very obvious question. You see, when Moshe and Aaron went to Paro, and they started this whole thing to let the Jews go, and so on and so forth, and obviously Paro was not too happy about it. He increased the workload, and you know, it became a whole tug of war, a whole confrontation. So somebody asked me, I mean, Paro certainly wanted to put an end to this rebellion. What would have been the simplest thing to do? To kill Moshe. So the question is, so why didn't he kill him? That would have been the smartest thing. That's what I would have done. I mean, if I was in his position, and you're suppressing the people, the leaders. Mm-hmm. We know. I mean, the way to keep down the masses can be subdued. The masses are never the threat. So is the elite. Mm-hmm. The same is true with the Palestinians. They developed a leadership group. It's just the leadership. And if you can remove the leadership, if you can destroy the leaders, then you can control the masses. It's always the case. Every revolution, every rebellion, it's always by the few. Even with the rebuilding of the State of Israel, the whole Zionist movement, so it was a few, a small minority of people. The majority of the masses didn't do much. Why didn't... Well, Paro wanted... I'm saying, why didn't Paro just have Moshe executed, have him killed? Mm-hmm. He thought to have him killed at the very beginning. Mm-hmm. When he killed the Egyptian, he had to leave. He had to run away. So what stopped him now? The simple thing to do is kill Moshe and Aaron. That's certainly going to put an end to this talk of rebellious. It's good kasha, right? The answer is contained in this rash. Paro was really believing in God. He would have let the Jews go. Paro always, at the moment when the pain was very great, he said to let him go. But then as soon as it eased up, as soon as he got rid of the plague, he went back to his old ways. Paro certainly should have...
Yeah, but there's different kinds of rebellion. There's kinds where it's because of a leader. That's the whole generating, motivating force.
Yeah.
Nelson Mandela. He's killed, and there really was nothing at all for...
No, that I don't agree with you. I think there's more.
That's already become... No, I
agree with Jackie.
I think
Paro
left means that the people are ready for rebellion and the leader came. Well,
should
God, another leader will come up because the people are ready to revolt.
I find that very hard to accept. Very hard to accept. Because he certainly would try it. What's the, I mean, he's not that, no one thinks like that. Every if you look at history, every person that's trying to maintain a system that's under attack, so let's say it's focused as a charismatic leader of the opposition. Like in the Philippines, they killed Aquino. All right, so then the wife came or whatever it is, he couldn't control. But certainly, Marcos tried to get rid of Aquino. Now, any dictator is going to crush the opposition, the leadership. I mean, Paro, on the one hand, is doing everything. He increases the workload. He'll do anything to stop the rebellion. But the most obvious thing, you can't replace emotion and an iron so simply. That's what everybody, any leader, any empire, whether the Romans, when there's opposition, when there's a rebellious movement, you get the leaders and you kill them. Now, it's not so easy to replace leaders, by the way. It's not such an easy thing because it's only the few that are qualified to win over the people. The smartest thing to do would be to kill Moshe and Aaron. He was afraid, then why didn't let the Jews go?
Who Paro?
He was that confident. So then why'd he go? Then why'd he have to go begging to Moshe to stop this plague? At that moment, you see, he realized that he was losing. So why not kill Moshe at that point? Because then he was afraid. Well, if he acknowledged these things, then he should have let the Jews go. He may have been realistic, but he certainly was a practical leader. He wasn't a fool. I don't think Paro was a fool. There's only one possible answer. There's only one possible answer. Take a look at Rashi. That's the only answer. That's the only answer. And Rashi says it. Vezeh Amara. No, you learned something new, you see. You didn't know this. This is a snap. This was the concept that he communicated to them in the burning bush. Not to kill Moshe. V'zeh ha-mareh, asher ha-isa basneh, And this is how Rashi learns the Zelafahos. Is there Hamara Asher Isa Basner? And this vision that you've seen in the snare, that is the sign. That I sent you. This is basically along the lines of Ronit, what Ronit said. This is the sign to you that I sent you, but the Tatsliach, Bishlichusai, and that you'll succeed in my mission. Ukhidayani, and I have the power of a Hatzil to say, Kasheri, Tatsliachusai, Vienano Uko, just like you've seen, that the bush fulfills my Shlichus, my mission, and it doesn't get consumed. Kach Telech, Bishlichusai, so too you will go in my mission, the Ein Chanizok, and you won't be harmed. So Moshe was also concerned about this. He'll kill me. How am I going to succeed? He'll kill me. So the... Sorry? Exactly. Exactly. And the snare was a metaphor. What does it mean? It means to be like this, that just like the snare, according to the natural order, should be consumed, I have the power to prevent the natural order from taking effect. So you've got to say, you too, Moshe, in terms of the natural order, you should be killed. How am I going to send you into the heart of the enemy, into the palace of the king, with no protection? Of course they're going to kill you. But the answer is, I will prevent that from happening. To the Ashkacha. Otherwise, certainly fire would have killed them. Now, exactly how this took place, the Torah does not reveal to us. You know, the Torah doesn't depict for us Paro trying to kill him and not being able to. We don't know. But we do know one thing, that was purely miraculous. And that's exactly what that was part of the question that Moshe asked, and that's what God demonstrated him in the vision of the snare. It communicated that idea. Your mission can only succeed by my ability to prevent the natural flow of the laws of nature from taking effect. Okay, now we have one more point to make. What is this? So that's how Rashi learns the pasuk, by the way. The Rambam learns this pasuk differently. If you remember when we did the Rambam and Nevuah, I won't be. I don't know if I'll be able to cover the Rambam's answer today. I'll refer to it on Tuesday. So Rashi learns like this: Vayomer, and he said, "Kiyeya imach, for I will be with you." In other words, it's not your own mission. V'zelecha os kianofish l'aticha, and this is the sign for you that you will succeed in your mission and you will not be destroyed. That is the burning bush. So v'zelecha os refers to the burning bush. It doesn't refer to the next part. That's two different ideas. Now a new idea. Oh, moreover, when you take out the nation from Egypt, they will worship God on this mountain. So how does that fit into the picture according to Rashi? Rashi says, exactly, the Shesha Alta, and that which you have, Mazakush Yeshli Israel. She Yetum in Mitzrayim. What's the first? Well, maybe let's get the end. Okay, well, Rashi. And with regard to the question of what chut, that they merit they should leave Egypt. Dover Gudol Yeshli Alo Tazu. I have a great thing with regard to this Exodus. Sharei Asidim Makabal HaTorah Ala HaRazeh. For they are destined to receive the Torah on this mountain. The Sof Shlosh Chadashim Sheyetu Mitzrayim. At the end of 3 months from the time they leave Mitzrayim. So, forget about the chut Zavos for the time being. Good question. But what God is saying over here is it's not the merit of Chut Avos. The merit that they have to leave is the fact that they will worship me on this mountain in 3 months. Okay. But there's a fundamental... Okay, fine. But there's a fundamental problem with the answer now. So in other words, God accepts the question. It's a valid question. Now we have to understand first of all why it's a valid question, if you remember. Because when God presented it to Moshe, God is saying that I've come down to save them because of the oppression and the affliction. It's not right that this should happen. If that's the case, then why does Moshe ask by what merit? You don't need this question. That's the first question. And the second question is, if you do need this question, what's the problem with the answer? What's the problem with the answer? Let's assume that's in the future, exactly. What the Moshe's question is, what did they do to deserve it now? And God is saying they're going to do something in the future. But that doesn't answer the question. Because when I'm asking by what merit, right, a person, concept in Yadis Bashar Husham that God deals with a person on the level that he's at now. In other words, the person on a level where he deserves a reward, he gets rewarded. And God knows the future. It could be that 5 years from now he will not be deserving it. And if a person deserves a punishment, that says that's in the pasuk by where? By Sherusham. Where is that pasuk? Yes? Basher Husham? That's anybody? Said with regard to Yishmael when
when Hagar died, and
that's
then
right.
They give him daughter.
That's
yeah.
right.
But he's
and God saved him, right? God saw her. What's the exact? What's the exact word? Maybe that's when did we read this? This is a very important lesson. Chazal learned out from me. Yishmael came as calling out, and God heard the voice of the youth. He was crying. I mean, he was starving. He was dying of thirst. Vayichlo amayim menachemus. So they were cast away, the mother and the son, and he was dying of thirst, and he cried out to God, and God heard the voice of the lad, and then God sent an angel, and Kisham Elokim, God said to Hagar not to worry, Al Tiri, do not be afraid, Kisham Elokim, that's Kol Hanar Basher Husham, right? For God has heard the voice of the lad Basher Husham, in that he is there. What does it mean by Sher Husham? The Rashi says, Lefi Masim Shu Osa Akshav Uhidon. He's being judged in accordance with the actions that he does now. Below Lefi Mashu Wasid Lato. But not in with regard to what he's going to do. Lefi Shahayu Malachi Asharis Makat Dragon. Because the ministering angels were accusing. The only one they were saying, Rabboni Shalom, Misha Asid Zaro, Lohamas Bimcha. But some Atamalo the heir, the one whose children are destined to kill your children in a thirst, you are going to remove you're going to create a well for him. Ruhume Shivain, and that will restore him. Oh, sometimes I'm wrong. Ruhume Shivain, and God answered them. Akshav Mahu. God says, what is he now? Tzadik or Russia? Is he a Tzadik or a Russia? Amrulo. They said to him, Tzadik. Amalahem, God said to him, "If he myself shall achshav and idano, I judge him in accordance with his present actions." V'zeu b'asher husham, and that is the meaning of b'asher husham. Then Rashi goes on to explain where his children later on afflicted the Jews with drought, with tzame. So the angels had a taina. How can you save Yishmael? His children had let him die, because his children are destined to afflict the Jews. And God then, sorry.
You can get a reward for something you could do in the future.
That's what I'm saying.
He's not going to get punishment for something bad he's going to do.
Exactly. For something that's going to happen in the future, for something that's happening in the future, we don't. Basher Husham means that God's method, we don't understand God's ways, but God's ways are to judge a person by what he is now. So if he's a tzaddik now, he's going to be judged as a tzaddik. Could be able to become a Russia later. Or bad, the people will descend from him. If he's a Russia now, in other words, don't put off your tshuva for the future.
No,
a lot of people do certain things. A lot of people sin, and they have in mind that they're going to become a tzaddik later on. Right? A lot of people live foolishly. Right? Mindy, you're familiar with this. People eat crazily, and they say, next month I'm going to get back on the thing, right? So you tell them it's a basher husham. It's now. It's
doesn't work kind of loosely.
So the question...
It
would be a problem if God would operate that way. It could be that's part of it. But even if people wouldn't notice, even if it was done in a way that nobody would see any connection, but God is saying, my system of justice is the system of Basher Husham. Now, so getting back now...
But is that always just on the side of a person in need, or
that's
is
right.
it
Basher Husham. Basher Husham. Oh, God might... I mean, I'm not saying that God would not see a merit in a person and not destroy him. That's Erech HaPayim. There is a concept. Oh, yeah, this doesn't contradict the Tetzvah Command. This doesn't contradict the idea of Erech HaPayim. Because that's also, God is slow to anger. In other words, God gives the person a chance. That's part of God's method, to give a person a chance. You see? Yeah, but you have to be careful of Basher Husham. Because you may warrant, if, don't be in a situation where you warrant a severe punishment and have to rely on God being Erech HaPayim for you. Could be, could that be? Even God has to balance all these things. We don't know how these things work. No, but I mean to say it reinforced the question, as Malki stated, that the Moshe's question is by what merit? What's the merit of? Well, the answer is what they're going to do in the future. But what about now? That's the question. Right? In other words, so then what was Moshe's question? God, Moshe should have known that God is not going to take them out of Egypt for no reason. So it must be for a reason, for the Torah. So what's he asking the question in the first place?
So what exactly was the question of Moshe? We have to redefine the question. Jackie?
Isn't he saying that all these declarations you already gave me just aren't enough?
Well, why not? Show us why not.
Because just because they came from Abraham, and just because he had a copy that he can do, is that enough to say that these people are deserving of?
Well, you're right. Why isn't it enough to say that they're deserving of? The fact that, what about all the arguments that God has brought
that
up? The suffering,
pain,
that they're in pain, and so on and so forth.
That
still
doesn't explain why you should choose them.
Good.
To help them.
In other words, there are many people that are suffering, many people that are oppressed. That's part of the reality of the situation. And the way God has designed the universe, of course God is against oppression and injustice, and we are supposed to, we humans are supposed to fight against it. But God does not intervene for every people that's oppressed. God only intervenes when there is a special purpose. There has to be something special that fits into God's plan for the whole creation. So, that was Moshe's question. The fact that they're enslaved, that they're suffering, so there are many people that are suffering. So why this? There must be a specific merit that this people has that, with regard to God's ultimate plan in the universe, that would warrant God's intervening. That's a very important factor. That's why Moshe's question is really warranted. It's a valid question. God has not given him sufficient reasons yet. Alright? Now, the next thing we have to ask is, but what's the answer? So Moshe is saying that in order for them to merit your intervention, they have to be deserving right now. So well, they're not deserving right now. God concedes the point. So what's the answer? Yes? Moshe's premise. No, he wasn't asking. He was saying about what merit.
They were really ready. They didn't want to know.
All right. I would like... Lori, you want to
go?
Didn't do this before. Let me see how this sounds. I think Moshe Rabbeinu was saying like this, that the Jews don't merit being taken out. Plain and simple. He didn't understand. Why not? Because he knew that God was taking them out for a purpose. And that purpose was to give them Torah, to give them proper ideas. So he looked at the Jews, and he saw that they were on a very low level. So what was his analysis? His analysis is that the Torah is the true system of true philosophical ideas, right? But philosophy, there's a problem. Because philosophy is only effective with a person who's on a philosophical level, who has a philosophical nature, who's on a rational level. Now, the way Moshe looked at it, there are basically two different types of people in the world. Right? There's the majority of mankind, which is people that are not on the philosophical level. They're basically instinctual, emotional people. That's the majority of mankind. And even people that are very intelligent, by the way. And when I refer to a person as being on the rational level, I'm not talking about his IQ. They're very, very bright people, but they're emotionalistic, you see, because the prime mover of the person is his emotion. That means if all the person's thinking and analysis is basically just to work out how he can satisfy his emotions, but his determination and his prime mover is the emotional. That's my thing. When you try and argue and reason with the person and elevate him to the level of an objective system, that's the way I feel about it. So what he's saying is that his feelings are reality. He lives by his feelings. I want you to know that that's the real problem that most people have with the Torah, because the Torah values are different. They don't conform to how they feel about things, and they can't accept. It can't be right if it doesn't conform to their feelings. That's what people always say. How can something which feels so good be wrong? It's impossible. Therefore, it must be right. Which, what that's really about is Torah, because they are deifying their own feelings. They're saying that that's one of the biggest, by the way, that's one of the biggest challenges that people face in accepting Torah. And even religious people. Because religious people accept Torah to do the mitzvah to feel good about themselves, but their philosophies are totally alien, have nothing to do with Torah. And you see, that's why they maintain hideous practices, superstitious practices alongside of Torah. To ward off the Yayin Hara, this and that, and you try and explain to them, this is against Torah. So it's not really Torah, it's their feelings that count. Their feelings. They feel very strongly about this.
But was
Moshe
the Rishon
Lion
when he was
accepted
from Pharaoh's house?
Was he really? Well, one thing. Well, let's finish this point over here. Now, Moshe was saying it's like this, that I can't see the purpose because this people is not a philosophical people. They're not on the rational level. To be on the rational level means, doesn't mean that you're a genius. It means today that you subscribe to reason and rationality. The prime mover of your psyche is the rational. So that when an idea is pointed out to you and you can see that it's reasonable, even if it goes against your emotion, you have to be in line with reason and rationality. So therefore Moshe said that this people doesn't merit, because what is the good of the Torah? Since they're on a low level, they're on the instinctual, they're on the emotional, there's no purpose, they're not going to move themselves, they're not going to operate in line with philosophy. That's his question. Philosophy is for the few. Philosophy is for the philosophers. It's not a philosophical people. So what are you taking him out for? That's his question.
Yeah, but what the Torah was.
Exactly. What God revealed to him was something unique about the Torah, and that is that the Torah is a system of philosophical ideas. However, and I asked this question recently to someone, what would you say, is the Torah a religion? Is Judaism a religion or a philosophy? It's a philosophy, so then that's Moshe's question, but it's not. It's a philosophical religion. It's a philosophical religion. Right, Chase says it's a religion of mind. What do you mean it's a religion? Religion is something really that caters to man's religious needs. That's what religion is. Religion is rooted. Judaism believes that man is religious by nature. To be religious is no great honor. We don't look up to a religious person. Because it's just following a natural instinct that a person has to feel, to observe, to feel secure and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So Judaism is not religious, it's a philosophical way of life, it's true ideas of how to live. But it's a philosophical system that's been incorporated into a system of religious practices so that it does cater to man's religious emotions. Basher Usham, in other words. God did not demand that a person just give up his emotions. The whole system of Yahweh is to relate to a person, and this is the only reason why Judaism survived. No other system. There were other philosophical systems, but they didn't survive. Because they had no way of dealing with a person on his level of imperfection. Judaism relates to the individual as an imperfect being. And therefore the system, it involves his emotions. It appeals to his emotions, but it never satisfies the emotions in a purely emotional way. In order to satisfy the emotion, you have to go through an intellectual experience which raises you to a higher level. So the person comes into the system on the level of an emotional being and he leaves as a philosopher. For example, a person has a desire to serve God. It's a religious instinctual need. So God does not allow him to satisfy that by bowing down to an object. He has to go to the Beis HaMikdash. And the Beis HaMikdash is under the control of great minds, of thinkers, of Kohanim, who are educated. And then the entire system, every aspect, doesn't follow the emotional desires. It's all worked out in terms of concepts and ideas and knowledge. So he's never allowed to satisfy the emotion in the primitive way. He can only satisfy the emotion through an intellectual experience. That's the whole system of mitzvot. A person more has a desire to eat. It's an instinctual thing. See? So the guy has an instinctual desire, so he just takes whatever he pleases and he satisfies it. He's living like an animal. He's acting out his instinctual framework. A Jew has a desire to eat. Before he can satisfy that, the mind has to take over. He has to start thinking, am I allowed to eat? No, I'm not allowed. He has to study. And all the laws pertaining to kosher and non-kosher are conceptual. You can't just answer them by a simple rule book of the Shulchan Aruch, because the cases are different, they're unique, and you have to understand that there's a concept, there's an idea. And the same is true with the sexual instinct. The person has a sexual desire, you can't just gratify it, forget about the issue of who's permitted, who's not, even with regard to his own wife. There's all kinds of questions about when she's permitted, and Hilchos Nida, and so on and so forth. So, the whole idea is to relate to the person on the level of the instinctual, and to transform him into an intellectual being. Moshe wasn't aware of that. That they could be different. That's what God revealed to him. In other words, there's a schus that they have now. So what's the schus that they have now? That for all of these reasons that I've given you, they can relate to the event of Sinai. No other people It's going to come in two phases. No other people in the world is on the level where they can even relate to the event of Sinai, where they could receive the revelation. They have to be capable of receiving the revelation. That's because of their, I've chosen them, because they are the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And B, they themselves have the elements of a nation because they've gone through the enslavement and having been the descendants of the fathers and having gone through this experience and they've turned to me, they're willing to listen. That's contained in the Chazal that says that God went to the other nations and every nation rejected the Torah. That means that there was no other nation that could have even received the Torah. You have to have a group that's capable of receiving and maintaining the Torah. The schus that they have right now is only this, that they're on a level where they at least can be a group that receives the Torah. But the ultimate objective of removing them, which is to create a people that can live on a high philosophical level and be a light to the nations and to sanctify my name throughout the world, that's going to come about as a result of the perfection that they will receive through the Torah. So it doesn't have to be Zohar Midbar. Zohar Midbar didn't. They contributed, they received the Torah, they established the system, they observed the Torah, then they failed, so they have to be wiped out. But the establishment of the nation, that there would be a nation that could receive the Torah, that was accomplished at Sinai. And this group has that merit, that they are on a level where they at least can relate to the events, to the revelation of Sinai. By the way, this idea, we say this in the Tfilot on Shabbos morning. If you get there official early enough, of course. Can anybody think of that as Sunday Tehillim? Part of the chakras on Shabbos. Taras Hashem Tamima. The Torah of God is whole, is complete. Meshivas Nafesh, restoring the soul. Eidus Hashem, the testimony of God, Ne'amana. It's true. What's the next word? Machimas Pesi. Machimas Pesi. There's no other thing like that on earth. Machimas Pesi, making wise the fool. The fool. So that's the essence of Torah. That Torah can take a fool and make him into a wise person. What's a fool? But yeah, a fool doesn't mean a person that doesn't have a high intellect. A fool is a person that just, exactly, that lives by his emotions. So as the Torah was designed in such a way that it can relate to a person who's living by his emotions, I mean machim. Machim aspect. That's the pasuk which expresses this idea. Okay, we'll stop here.